All right.
We start again.
Okay, friends, neighbors, robots of the future.
Yeah, robots.
Welcome to Bingo is Life.
Yay!
The podcast. Live and in person from a very special location today on the stage of Court Square Theater.
On the stage. It's pretty impressive.
In downtown Harrisonburg. Brought to you by Ruby's Arcade and Clementine
Thanks.
Cafe.
Yes, thank you, Ruby's.
We have a special edition here with a very special guest coming up quite shortly, and we even have one person in the audience in the silent David hey, Aaron chair.
Wow, there are contingencies.
Joined to my right as you watch the action on the screen, Michael and Christopher Hadishell.
Hey, thank you, yes.
And the one and only Dan Easley.
Hey, man, what's happening?
Over here, the manager of Court Square Theater, the one and only Mom Jack.
One of them.
So how did Bingo go tonight? You guys hustled over here.
We did, but you know what? It was a very energetic crowd tonight. And just, I don't know how to put it. Like, there are sometimes when it works really well, and I don't know why. There's like a magic sauce to it that I'll never understand, but it was a fun crowd, and the energy was just right, and it was just, I don't know, a very good time.
It was because they laughed at our jokes.
That definitely helps. That definitely helps.
I don't know. You don't always get. They don't always laugh.
Yeah.
But this crowd, there was like 10 people that were laughing out loud at all the stupid stuff, and then you're like, we can't do anything wrong. You know that moment where you're like, they like
we got it.
They love me. Yeah.
It's embarrassingly fun. Is what it is.
Yeah.
Did anyone win the $150?
No. But we had four people win the last game of Bingo.
What? Nice.
Yeah. Four people. So
at the same time.
Yeah. At the same time.
That sounds fixed to me.
It does, doesn't it? It was not. It was the universe telling us, good luck with that.
It's all those counterfeit cards I've been putting out there in the world.
Did they all bowl simultaneously?
No. We did two on two paper, rock, scissors to get it down to two people. Uh-huh. And then we let the two people bowl for the prize. Neither of them got it. But all four of them won a free pizza.
Yeah, yeah.
Free
pizza. So yeah. The reason we're at the Court Square Theaters, we just finished the second night of auditions for Jake Dare's play.
That's right.
Yeah. If you're an aspiring thespian, we're still probably looking for some parts. So
okay,
we had some good turnout, but... still need some more warm bodies for the
warm bodies in the room.
Jay, you just got too many dang characters in your
show.
Yeah,
I know. I'm just too many complicated words in my play.
Was tonight the first audition?
No, it was the second night. We probably have parts of it cast and some more to round up.
Now I saw Bill. Was he here this
Bill
evening?
Bill was here this evening.
Okay, cool.
Bill was here this evening.
I assume he'll probably find some way into this production.
I believe so. Shall we bring in our guest?
Absolutely.
Well, we have a very special guest tonight. My mentor from James Madison University, all the way from is Mount Crawford your address?
That's my post office.
Is his post office address?
I don't live in Mount Crawford.
Nice.
We have the one and only Dr. Thomas L. King.
Welcome aboard.
He's grimacing already.
We're glad you're here, regardless of how you might grimace.
Now, for those of you who don't know, which is like everyone except for me on the podcast, Tom was when did you come to James Madison? In the early 70s, right?
From 1974.
And did the theater program exist at that point?
It existed as part of the communications department.
And you came in at the same time as Tom Arthur?
No, he was here a year before, and he hired me.
So where I first met Tom was when he had his office in the Theater 2. Do any of you folks remember that?
I do, yeah.
The Wampler Theater, and it was the experimental theater, and he taught the experimental theater class. And maybe you could tell us a little bit about what happened back then in the golden days of the experimental theater.
Well, I mean, the way we ran the thing was that pretty much without any requirement for any prior approval, just if you could get the resources together, you could do the show. I mean, I guess we were kind of modeled on something like Joe Chino's Cafe Cafe Chino in New York. I remember reading something about it where somebody had written a play and they said, oh, let's take it over to Joe Chino and see what he wants to do with it. And he was busy doing lights or something like that. And he just turned and gave the guy a date to do it. He didn't even ask to read the play or anything else. And I guess that's basically what our idea was with the experimental theaters. We're going to approve it after it's done. One way I like to put it is we give them a lot of rope and then see if they're going to hang themselves or escape. and they often escaped.
At what point had Ron Carrier taken over as president in this time frame?
It was before I was here.
Before you were there. Now, you were saying, you were telling me the other day, the very first show you did in the experimental theater was a version of Hair.
Yeah, it was Hair.
Not a version. It was Hair.
Yeah,
and Ron Carrier had an issue with a hair at a previous production.
Yeah, he was at some university in Tennessee. I can't remember what it might have been, East Tennessee or something like that. In fact, there was a documentary about it, and there was a lot of controversy about it. And so he was gun shy of Hair. And it was a question as whether or not he was going to let it be done as the first show. But we managed to finally make that the first show.
How does a conversation like that go? How does it start? Hey, I need to talk to you about Hair.
No, he just said he didn't want. I don't know. I didn't actually speak to him face to face. We just understood he didn't want to do it, and I was assigned to write a justification.
yeah, very good.
And I wrote the justification, and I guess he read it.
Yeah.
I never talked to him.
And you said that particular production, nobody took their clothes off.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
That was part of the requirement.
Oh yeah, actually, I've never seen a production of the play when it was done as it was done originally. My understanding is they just took their clothes off at the end.
Mm-hmm.
There's a brief moment.
And, it's a debriefed moment.
Exactly. Seems like there are a lot of shows in New York anymore that have at least a little nudity.
I just went and saw my first Broadway show. I went and saw Six. Have you guys heard about this? That musical? So Six is an all-female cast, and it's an all-female band, and it is about the six wives of Henry VIII.
Oh.
And
that sounds fun.
It is awesome and high-energy show, full-on high-energy, and it's 80 minutes, no intermission.
Nice.
And so it is just go. You get in there, you sit in the theater, and they just take off. And there's only six characters. I mean, there's six characters.
That's a lot of stories to tell in 80 minutes.
Yeah, they really, they call it a...
Some of them were fairly short stories,
yeah,
though.
They were. Yeah. They were. And yeah, someone's like, and I was killed immediately. but no, it was fascinating. It was really, really fun.
Now, you still get up to? Do you still get up there with Rosemary to see shows on Broadway these days?
I usually try to avoid Broadway.
Off Broadway.
I think of Broadway as a little bit like Branson, Missouri. it's primarily a tourist attraction.
What was the last show you saw up there?
I saw Waiting for Godot at a theater in Brooklyn.
Whoa!
The theater for a new audience. I thought I was going to see a play by a Spanish playwright that's rarely done called The Sheepwell, but one of the cast members got COVID and it was canceled and we were leaving and so we didn't get to see it. But we did see a very good production of Waiting for Godot.
Now, tell me what were some of the shows that you that are memorable to you from the theater too in years gone by? You and I were in Hamlet together. I mean, how did that stack up? I mean, that seems really memorable to me.
It's hard to say when you're looking at it from the inside. I guess the first thing that occurs to me when you asked me that question was The Iceman Cometh. Because it was a really kind of a remarkable thing to do, that great long play by Eugene O'Neill. And it was hot. We didn't have air conditioning in there, but it seemed to me like it really...
Is that irony when you're in a hot theater doing the Iceman coming?
I suppose.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the title doesn't really have anything to do with the Iceman. It has to do with a joke. You probably heard the joke. but I guess metaphorically, at least in that play, the Iceman is just somebody who kind of kills the buzz.
Right, right.
He destroys their ideals and their pipe dreams.
Do you remember who was involved with it?
Actually, no.
Now, do you know the one? I was going to ask you about
Lloyd Combs. I think
That's might be. It was before my time.
It was fairly early on. Yeah.
Do you remember Fief Sutton very well?
Yeah.
Did he ever direct plays in there?
Oh, he worked in there a lot. He and Dwayne Yancey and the guy that the award's named after, what's his name? The Steven Snyder Award. Steven Snyder and Dwayne Yancey and Fief Sutton worked in there a lot. And I still remember one time when Fief was here as a guest, after he had become somewhat celebrated in Hollywood, and somebody asked him what was the most valuable course he took at JMU. And I was sitting up pretty close to him, and I could see this kind of look of panic and hesitation in his face, because as if the real answer was none. But what he said was that he was working in the experimental theater. Basically, what was done at that time, at least, I don't think this is true anymore, is we just turned it over to the students to let them do whatever they wanted to. And Fief wrote, and Steve Snyder wrote, and Dwayne Yancey wrote, and they directed plays and cast the plays themselves. He said then that was the best experience he had for learning to do what he was doing.
For anyone who doesn't know, Fief Sutton was a JMU graduate who went on to become the story editor for Cheers.
Yeah, he was the head writer, and then he wrote for Boston Legal, too. And he had a health problem, and he's been writing more movie scripts now.
He wrote I believe it was called The Fan. It was a movie that was made that De Niro was in.
I don't know.
Wrote the screenplay for that. The Steve Snyder passed away, right?
Yeah, he was killed in a car accident here in Harrisonburg. That's why there's an award for it.
And he was an undergraduate at the time? Yeah, that was.
Wow.
And I remember I was telling you the other day that when I first got involved in JMU theater back in the 1840s, I was asking multiple people about what were the best classes to take, and everyone would say the only class that's really worth anything in the JMU theater department is basic acting with Tom King.
Huh. I never took an acting class.
You never took an acting class. What's the best play you think you, or what's your most memorable play you directed over there at JMU for this?
I would say maybe I would like to cheat and say two.
Okay.
One of the last ones I did, which was a production of Medea, with using a lot of music and so forth, and A Lie of the Mind.
That would have been a while back, or?
I'm not sure. A Lie of the Mind, I think, was probably around early 90s. And Medea was was probably 2003 or 4.
I think you and I we've probably been in three plays. We were in Hamlet, and then we were also in Glenn Ross, and then we were talking about that production of the Shepherd, the Sam Shepherd play that Karen McKee directed with Charlie Tucker. And I'm having this tour. I haven't seen your
movie. I can't see it. I can't remember it myself. I saw it at the theater isn't there anymore. Circle Repertory. I saw it in New York there. And Ed Harris was in it before he was famous. But what's it called?
Yeah.
I can't remember either.
It has love in the title.
Listener, if you know, call
410-810.
The lines are open.
I know, that's amazing. I can't remember that name either.
Would you, is this the same era? I have no idea where Ken Gibson and Ron Copeland fall. Did you teach either of those guys?
Yeah. Ron Copeland was in a production of The Boys Next Door that I directed one summer. I think it was it was around 1995 or something like that. And I can't remember whether I had Ken Gibson in a class or not, but I mean, I knew Ken Gibson when he was a student here, and Ron too.
Yeah.
Fool for Love.
Ken Gibson.
Fool for Love. That's it.
You win the prize.
I was going to have to go home and just like stick my head in the oven. It's like, smokes.
You know that Fool for Love? I didn't know if you were talking about the play or if you were talking about Ken Gibson.
Ken Gibson. He's a fool for love.
Is Ken Gibson still around? He used to teach at Spotswood, I think.
Well, now he's moved on. He teaches at Harrisonburg High School now, and he is beloved by the community. I mean, I've never heard from everyone I've talked to that goes to Harrisonburg High School when they talk about the theater program. All they do is tell me how great Ken Gibson is. Huh. Seriously, it is he has done something. Yeah. We're going to get him on this podcast as well.
It's going to happen.
Oh, yeah.
I was talking to Ron yesterday. We've had a 35-year-old running joke about the theater, too. The seating arrangement were these bleachers.
Right.
And he was talking about the night of a dress rehearsal. He was hiding underneath the bleachers and covering his face because he was afraid, you know, that everything wasn't coming together. So that's a metaphor for the theater experience. Directing is hiding underneath
hiding
the bleachers.
In the bleachers.
What happens if it doesn't come together, though? You do it anyway?
You open the doors and everybody comes in and the lights turn on.
It always does. I mean, I remember that that movie of Shakespeare in Love where the historical character, Philip Henslow, appears in that, who had another theater, a rival theater. A lot we know about the theater of Shakespeare's time comes from Henslow's papers. Anyway, he keeps saying, it'll all work out. In my experience, even though it looks like it's going to be a disaster, it seems like somehow or another you managed to get it done. I don't know. In my experience, there are probably people who have had other experiences where it was a catastrophe.
I once paid I was involved in a theater, in a show, and it was not going well. And I was like, if I pay you the rights for the show, can we cancel it?
Yeah.
The answer was yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That bad?
Yeah, it was bad.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, we can't do this.
Yeah.
I remember things would barely come together often at the theater, too. They were talking about, you know, it was the opening night, and they had forgotten to do the lights, and they'd call the guy up, and he'd come down there and spend all night, and get the lights together at the very last minute.
Well, actually, it was quicker than that. At least one time I remember when we were doing a couple of other students and I were doing a double bill of 2 one-act plays, Suicide in B Flat by Sam Shepard and Sexual Perversity in Chicago by David Mamet. And whoever was doing the lights, it was Dave, I can't remember his last name right now, but anyway, he was doing the lights and he thought we were opening tomorrow. and he said, and then we said, no, we're opening tonight. And he just told us to get out of the theater, and he went in there and started dragging a ladder around and focusing lights, and got it done.
That's awesome.
In about an hour.
So today I was at Riverheads High School, and they're doing a production of Charlie Brown the musical up there, and I had the two directors, their co-directors, they were like, we desperately need help with our lights. And so I had to crawl up this catwalk. It was this auditorium that they set the lights and then they set it and forget it. I mean, there's no
just a general wash.
Yeah mm-hmm. A general wash. Yep. And they had ideas, and so here I was with a cell phone and they were telling me on the cell phone what they wanted me to do with the lights.
While you were 40 feet in the air.
Oh, yeah. While I was on that little catwalk
trying
to tilt lights today. That was my job today. And it was, they were super happy.
That's cool.
It was all good. But it was funny that was my day.
I did some lighting at the public TV station at WVPT when it was still in town. Now, the main thing I remember is that all of the lights were, you know, 1,000 or 1,500 watt lights. And they're very heavy. And all of the insulation was cloth.
Oh, yeah.
It's just terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, they're hot. Well, I had to wear gloves.
Mm-hmm.
I was wearing gloves the whole time. I was like, and I'm not a lights guy. It's not like.
I mean, the insulation on the wires was cloth.
Actually, yeah. Well, I don't know when this was, but it was probably asbestos.
Right.
Oh, probably so, yeah.
Now it's fiberglass, but it used to be asbestos.
Yeah.
No, but it's interesting. Well,
you might want to get checked out, Dan.
No, I've been checked out.
tell us a little bit about your sheep farm that you tell the people. People who are listening. You also, while you were having a career as a educator, you also raised sheep down in, not in Mount Crawford.
In Rockingham County,
Rockingham County.
Near the town of Pleasant Valley.
Right.
But our address is Mount Crawford. We get the mail from the Mount Crawford Post Office.
And you had, how many sheep did you have at any one given time?
The most I ever had was 60 ewes and 2 rams, but I finally settled on trying to keep them between 40 and 50. It worked a little better. 60 was just more than I could handle, and more than the patcher could handle if it got a little dry.
So the ratio is 60 to 2? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's about 30 to 1, 25 or 30 to 1.
Right, right.
Yeah. Wow.
You don't want to see, you want to keep your herd low, because if you have to count that high to fall asleep, just really cuts into your day. Well,
and
counting sheep. Just.
And sheep are seasonal breeders, so you need enough, as they put it, ram power to get them. So you have, normally all the lambs are born within 3 weeks.
Wow.
Usually there'll be a couple of stragglers that didn't get bred. Maybe it'll be 3 weeks later, but most of them come within a period of about 3 weeks.
Were you the one shearing them?
No,
you paid.
That's an expert's job.
Okay,
I caught them and set them up for the shearer.
Did you ever have wild dogs come through?
I know people have had problems like that. Yeah. A neighbor up the road, Larry Garber, used to be on the board of supervisors, and his son is the county treasurer.
Yeah.
Todd Garber. You might have heard the name. Yeah. Anyway, he had some trouble with dogs, and finally he had I don't know how many sheep killed one night. With dogs chasing them around. I never had any problem. One year when I wasn't there, as lambing started, I had several lambs, and I'm not sure what it was, that something killed them, and just had torn the throat out and eaten the guts out of them and just left the rest of it. But I think it was partly because I wasn't there, and I never had any trouble except that one year.
Bigfoot.
Yeah, probably.
Can you tell the difference between what a wild dog does and what a coyote does?
I couldn't. Yeah. And I'm not sure that this was a coyote, but I mean, there are coyotes everywhere, and I know there are coyotes in our neighborhood. I've heard them at night. Mm-hmm.
Were your sheep, were they for wool or were they for food?
They were for food. Wool is actually a liability.
Oh, really?
It costs more to shear sheep than the wool's worth. In fact, you know, at Tech and places like that, they're actually trying to promote what they call hair sheep that have a coat more like a goat or a deer or a cow that don't have to be shorn, but they don't grow as fast and they don't produce as meaty a carcass.
Yeah.
How did they get, is that genetic engineering or they just bred them that way?
I think it's a different breed.
It's a different breed.
Like, yeah.
And the real question is, are they hard to direct?
actually, they are. but they're not as hard.
Used to
they're not as hard as goats. I mean, because goats are a lot smarter. Yeah. Our daughter had goats for a while. They ran with the sheep.
Yeah, so our mother grew up in Augusta County, and our grandfather had free-range turkeys.
Uh-huh.
And the story always was, wow, here come the wild dogs, and they would just come take out a bunch of turkeys.
Yeah.
And that was her. She didn't talk about coyotes. She always said herds of
wild dogs. Yeah.
That was, Augusta County, who knows? I don't know.
Well, but I think coyotes are fairly recent here. I mean, we came in 1974, and I remember they were talking in the later 70s, early 80s, they were talking about coyotes just starting to appear in the county. So at that time, there may not have been coyotes. I know this is before I was born, but my grandfather used to raise sheep, and he got out of it because he had so much trouble with dogs.
Yeah. It's bizarre.
It is. It is.
I mean, today, every dog's on a leash. Or they're like a little dog that right, James right, got.
Right. Yeah, I don't have a manly hunting dog. He thinks he's a hunting dog. Okay, so we're getting close to the end. Does this mean that am I hearing music in the
of course
in,
you
in,
are
am I hearing yeah. music in the background? Once again, thanks so much to Tom for putting up with our silly
absolutely
here.
Thank you for being here.
Awesome.
Once again, this is Bingo is Life, live and in person at the Ruby's Arcade every...
Let me just say, I love where these conversations go. You never know what you're going to get here. That's awesome.
Wild dogs. I've been waiting for this
That's
one.
That's right, right.
Live and in person. Bingo is Life. Laugh at all their jokes, 7:30 to 8:30 every Tuesday night.
We need it.
They need it very badly. And anytime you want to listen to us here on the internet, we'll see you next time, kids. Thanks again.
Next week when we'll be having an interview with a herd of wild dogs.
Good night.
Bingo is Life, a post-bingo Harrisonburg podcast, is brought to you by the Brothers Howdy Show and our friends at Ruby's Arcade in downtown Harrisonburg, Virginia. If you've enjoyed the show and feel it's worth spreading a little joy in this world, please tell just one person that you like this podcast. Word of mouth, more than any other form of promotion, is how creative works get noticed and sustain themselves. Thank you, Andrew Hickey, for that bit of wisdom. And thank you, listeners, for being part of the fun.